Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Yulia Pavitska, and I'm manager of the Sanctions Program at KC Institute. I'm delighted to welcome you to the new season of KC Talks. This summer, we will be discussing our new studies with their authors, debating the key issues in the economic battle against Russia with the world's leading experts, and delving into the reconstruction of Ukraine during and after the war. Today, in the first episode of our new season, we focus on the Russian Shadow Fleet. In our new research, we examine how Russia has forged its Shadow Fleet to evade sanctions and pose an environmental threat to the world. We also show how and where Russia can get even more of old inadequately insured tankers to completely cut off Western services from its oil exports. Finally, we outline the key steps that could prevent this from happening. I'm pleased to introduce the authors of the study, Benjamin Hingelstock, Anatoly Kravtsev, and Alexey Hrebanovsky. Without any further ado, let's begin. Welcome and thank you for joining us on KC Talks. Let's start with you, Benjamin. Can you give our listeners a basic understanding of what exactly the Shadow Fleet is?
Greetings, Yulia, and our listeners. It is great to be with you today. The term Shadow Fleet is used by different people in different ways. For us, it refers to a group of tankers that operate outside of the regulatory framework established by international sanctions. That means these ships are owned and/or managed by entities not from the EU or G7, and they lack oil spill insurance, also known as protection and indemnity or P&I insurance from the international group, making them not subject to the price cap on Russian oil. Essentially, they operate under the radar, transporting Russian crude oil and petroleum products without the oversight that usually applies to maritime shipping.
That's a great start. Anatoly, could you expand on why Russia felt the need to create this Shadow Fleet?
Certainly. The creation of the Shadow Fleet was a strategic response to the sanctions imposed by the G7 and the EU, which aimed to limit Russia's oil revenue while maintaining global oil supply. With traditional buyers like the EU discounting more stubborn imports of Russian oil, Russia needed a way to circumvent these restrictions to keep its oil flowing to new markets, particularly in Asia. The Shadow Fleet allows Russia to continue exporting oil and generating revenue without adhering to the price cap or other regulatory measures.
Interesting. So, Alexey, how did Russia go about building this fleet? What are the steps involved?
The process was quite methodical. Russia primarily acquired older tankers that were no longer in use by mainstream fleets. The ships, often over 15 years old, were purchased from various sources, including international markets, where they would otherwise be decommissioned. Additionally, they transferred tankers previously owned by Russian entities like Sovcomflot to new management companies that were not subject to the sanction. This allowed them to maintain control over a significant number of vessels without driving direct links to sanctioned entities.
That looks like a complex operation. Anatoly, can you tell us more about the current structure and operations of this fleet?
As of the first quarter of 2024, we estimate that the Russian Shadow Fleet consists of 435 vessels. This is split between those transporting crude oil and those transporting oil products. To give you a sense of scale, the global tanker fleet consists of around 11,000 vessels, and the shadow part of it is around 978 vessels. Russia's Shadow Fleet makes up about 44% of it. If in the first half of 2022 the Shadow Fleet transported about 30% of crude oil and 25% of petroleum products on a monthly basis, as for May 2024, these shares are 80-85% and 35-40% respectively, which, at least in terms of crude oil, is a matter of serious concern. This shows how critical and large-scale the Shadow Fleet operation has become.
Benjamin, you mentioned the strategic necessity of this fleet. What are the broader implications for global energy markets and the effectiveness of the sanctions?
The shadow fleet fundamentally undermines the effectiveness of the international sanctions regime. By allowing Russia to evade the price cap and continue to earn substantial revenues from its oil exports, it creates what is essentially a parallel market that is less transparent and harder to regulate. And as Anatoly mentioned, we have documented that the shadow fleet's role has grown substantially in recent months.
Before we go on, let's touch on another critical aspect of this issue: the environmental threat posed by the shadow fleet. Benjamin, can you please explain where this threat comes from and why we are particularly concerned about it?
Certainly, Yulia. The environmental threat primarily stems from the fact that many vessels in the shadow fleet are old and poorly maintained. Importantly, these tankers also often lack proper spill liability insurance and do not meet international safety standards. Because they're not subject to the usual regulatory oversight, they're at a higher risk of accidents, such as oil spills, which can have devastating effects on marine ecosystems and on coastal communities.
Anatoly, can you please elaborate on the specific risks these vessels pose?
The risks are significant. Many of these tankers are over 15 years old and have been purchased from fleets where they were deemed no longer seaworthy. They often operate with inadequate maintenance and without the necessary of safety inspections. Furthermore, these ships are often run by low-qualified crews, as more experienced personnel are unwilling to engage with old tankers due to the risk involved. The lack of proper insurance means that in the event of an accident, there is no guaranteed financial mechanism in place to cover the cleanup costs. This is particularly concerning in regions like the Baltic Sea, the Black Sea, and Mediterranean, where these tankers frequently operate.
But why is it challenging to enforce environmental regulations on these shadow fleet vessels?
It is challenging because they operate outside traditional regulatory frameworks. They often use tactics like turning off their tracking transponders to evade detection, which is known as AIS spoofing. Additionally, the ownership and management structures of these tankers are often opaque, making it difficult to hold the responsible parties accountable.
Let's now talk about management companies and the flags under which these shadow vessels' ships sail. Anatoly, can you start by explaining what flags they particularly sail under and why those flags are chosen?
The vessels in the shadow fleet often sail under flags of convenience from countries like Panama, Liberia, Gabon, the Marshall Islands, and the Cook Islands. These flags are chosen because the regulatory requirements in these jurisdictions are less stringent, allowing the vessels to operate with minimal oversight. Additionally, these countries often have limited capacity or willingness to enforce international maritime regulations, making them attractive for shadow fleet operations.
And who their management companies are and how they are connected to Russia?
The management companies that oversee the operations of the shadow fleet are typically based in jurisdictions outside of the sanctioned coalition, such as United Arab Emirates, China, India. These companies are responsible for the commercial management of the vessels, including contracts, finance, and cargo transportation. Many of these companies have direct or indirect connection to Russia. For example, Emirates-based Sand Ship Management and Oil Tankers SCF Management manage a significant portion of the shadow fleet and have been linked to Russian state-owned entities like Sovcomflot.
But some of these management companies are already sanctioned. Do you consider such sanctions to be effective?
We do not. While it is possible to sanction management companies, the effectiveness of this strategy is quite limited. Russia and its partners can easily switch the management of shadow fleet tankers to new companies or create entirely new entities to take over operations. For example, take Sunship Management. When the company was sanctioned by the US, UK, and EU, the vessels were quickly transferred to a company called Oil Tankers SCF and a newly formed player in stream ship management. These new companies are often set up in the same regions or even the same buildings, which really shows that this is a concerted effort at evading enforcement action. This constant reshuffling creates a cat and mouse game, so to speak, where governments struggle to keep up with the changes, and it makes it quite challenging to track and enforce such sanctions effectively.
The tracking changes in management and flags create a moving target for enforcement against agencies. Each time a vessel's management is transferred or its flag is changed, it requires significant resources and coordination to update sanction list and track the new entities involved.
So given these challenges, what would be the right sanction strategy to effectively counter the shadow fleet?
That's a great question, Yulia. The key to an effective sanctions strategy lies in targeting the vessels themselves, rather than just the management companies, as we discussed. By designating the tankers that are part of the shadow fleet, we can effectively remove them from commercial operations, regardless of who manages them or under what flag they sail. This approach, importantly, creates significant financial and operational burdens for Russia and its partners, and it makes it more difficult and costly to maintain the shadow fleet.
Sanctions on the tanker would involve designating them as prohibited vessels, meaning that any entity involved in their operation, be it insurers, port services, or suppliers, would face penalties. This would effectively isolate these vessels, preventing them from docking at international ports, obtaining insurance, or accessing necessary maintenance and suppliers. The impact would be substantial, as it would not only hinder the operational capacity of the shadow fleet, but also increase the cost associated with running these tankers. Over time, this could deter entities from participation in this operation and reduce the fleet overall effectiveness.
A positive example of this strategy in action occurred starting in October 2023, when the Office of Foreign Assets Control of the US Department of the Treasury began imposing sanctions on individual tankers that violated the price cap or operated within the Russian Federation's marine sector. By May 2024, 41 tankers had been designated, and this led to most of these vessels being idled. Specifically, 38 of the sanctioned tankers ceased all activities, remaining idle in locations such as the Japanese, Eastern China, Mediterranean, and the Black Seas. This demonstrates the effectiveness of targeting individual vessels, as it directly impacts their ability to operate.
However, despite these sanctions, Russia seems to be trying to compensate for the loss of these vessels by acquiring new tankers for its shadow fleet. Anatoly, can you please shed some light on how Russia is managing to get new tankers?
Yes, and it's true, because between December 2023 and May 2024, Russia managed to recruit 35 new tankers for the transport of its oil. These tankers had not previously engaged in such activities throughout 2023. Specifically, 13 tankers are managed by Chinese companies, 5 by Indian companies, 5 by various companies registered in the Seychelles and others. And with our new research, which was made in May 2024, Russia was still able to add 14 new tankers, 6 of which belong to the shadow fleet. It's worth noting that 2 of them were actively transporting sanctioned Iranian or Venezuelan oil. Although the involvement of such tankers is not yet widespread, it already suggests that a joint network of such shadow tankers may be created to transport oil from these two countries in turn.
And they definitely need more. Based on our analysis, Russia needs a substantial number of additional vessels to meet its export demands. Specifically, we estimate that Russia could require up to 500 additional Aframax equivalent crude oil tankers and 1,200 CFAmax equivalent product tankers from the mainstream fleet if they continue their current strategies. These additional vessels would enable Russia to maintain its export capacity and continuous violation of international sanctions.
Alexei, how Russia can maintain and expand its fleet further?
They can acquire older vessels from the mainstream or wide fleet, which currently holds P&I insurance. We estimate there are 276 crude oil tankers, it's mean 325 Aframax equivalents, and 1,123 product tankers, it's mean almost 1,000 CFA max equivalent, potentially available from this source. Another avenue is the transfer of vessels from the non-Russian shadow fleet. Lastly, Russia can also draw from a network of partners management tankers, which include vessels not currently involved in transportation Russian cargo, but managed by companies that are. This approach adds another 100 crude oil tankers, almost 135 Aframax equivalent, and almost 200 tankers to their potential fleet.
Thank you. Now let's discuss how we can prevent the expansion and operations of the Russian shadow fleet. What are the most effective measures we believe to prevent this from happening?
So several measures need to be taken here. First, we should continue and expand the vessel designation campaign. This strategy has proven to be extremely successful in removing shadow fleet tankers from operations. The US has stopped its campaign for now, but it's crucial to continue. The UK and EU have also recently sanctioned vessels, and we will monitor the effects of these actions. Authorities, in our view, should prioritize vessels most heavily used for the export of Russian crude oil from Baltic and Black Sea ports to India and China, as this would drive up operational costs the most. It is also critical to take enforcement action against anyone who interacts with a designated tanker or its cargo, to maintain the credibility of the secondary sanctions threat that is fundamentally what makes this strategy effective. Second, coalition countries should require all vessels entering their ports to disclose information about their mandatory oil spill insurance to improve transparency in this area. Should they refuse to do so, or should the coverage be inadequate, these vessels should be banned from entry. Additionally, the sale of spare parts for use by such vessels should be prohibited. This would significantly increase the operational cost and logistical challenges for the shadow fleet. Countries should also think about requesting insurance information from tankers that operate either in or close to their waters and designate those that refuse to do so or that do not have adequate insurance. Enforcing existing oil spill insurance requirements can address the significant environmental threats posed by aging and uninsured shadow fleet tankers that we discussed earlier. Coalition countries should take the enforcement of these International Maritime Organization regulations upon themselves, essentially because the flag states of the Russian shadow fleet have proven unable or unwilling to do so. This would ultimately force operators to return to G7 or EU-based insurance, thereby increasing compliance requirements and pushing more Russian oil under the price cap regime.
I want to add that broadened and enforced restrictions on vessel sales also can significantly limit Russia's ability to acquire tankers from the mainstream or wide fleet. Regulations such as the EU's authorization requirement should be adopted by other coalition jurisdictions and applied strictly. The threat of secondary sanctions by the US could also increase the impact considerably, affecting any buyer, seller, or facilitator with connections to the US financial system.
And what role do secondary sanctions play in deterring shadow fleet operations?
A very big one. They alter the risk perceptions of and increase the costs for all of the actors involved here. But again, for the secondary sanctions threat to be credible, enforcement actions against those interacting with sanctioned tankers, entities, or cargoes is critical. Authorities should also focus on OPAC vessel ownership and management networks, as well as practices like ship-to-ship operations and AIS spoofing, which are often used to circumvent sanctions.
And perhaps the final question, how do technological advances help in this effort? Can we better detect and shed light on these shadow tankers?
Yes, we should understand that technological advancements are key to enhancing enforcement capabilities. Improved satellite tracking and use of artificial intelligence can help identify patterns of evasion tactics such as ship-to-ship transfer and ice spoofing. These technologies can provide real-time data and predictive analytics to authorities, allowing for more effective interventions. Moreover, integration data across international maritime authorities can provide a comprehensive view of tanker operations, helping to close the gaps that the Shadow Fleet exploits.
Thank you, Anatoly, Alexei, and Benjamin, for providing such a comprehensive insights into this complex issue. It is clear that preventing the operations of the Russian Shadow Fleet requires a coordinated, multifaceted approach involving international cooperation, technological advancements, regulatory strengthening, and industry participation. To our listeners, thank you for your time and engagement. I hope that today's discussion has offered you fresh perspective on the Russian Shadow Fleet and the global implication of its operations. This full study on the Shadow Fleet is available on the KC website. We're also tracking this issue closely in our monthly Russian Oil Tracker, providing ongoing analysis and updates. If you found this episode informative and wish to continue exploring such critical issues with us, I encourage you to sign up so you don't miss any of our content. For updates and more insightful discussions, follow us on Twitter at KC Institute. We have an exciting lineup of guests and topics in the pipeline for you. Thank you once again. This is Yulia Pavitska, saying until next time.